I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move
Good day, everybody, and welcome back to I Like to Movie Movie. My name is Dan Scully.
I'm Stephen Richards. What are we welcoming that back from?
Let's just welcome back to the show. You've had some time.
Where'd they
away.
Go?
Where they were, wherever the wind took them. We did a Hot Property, which you can check out at Hot Property Pod.
Yeah.
And then now they're back. It's just a welcome back, you know? When you open up your pod app where you can find us on Spotify or Anchor or on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher or whatever you get your podcasts.
Or the old-timey record store.
Or the old-timey record store. You see our icon pop up and you go, oh, man, welcome back. Yeah. So welcome back to all of you. I also want to shout out the Overlook Film Festival with a big thank you. Some of my coverage was in the previous episode, so thank you to everybody who listened to the bonus drops. Also, you can check out scullyvision.com for more updated coverage coming from that festival over the next few days. Also, this weekend, I will be covering the Philadelphia Film Society's Spring Fest, so stay tuned to everything for more information about that. And as always, you can find us at Movie Movie Cast on all of the things.
Yeah.
Does that sound good? All right, cool, cool.
Great.
So, all right, we'll get into it.
Dan, today... great intro, dude.
Thanks, man. One day you'll learn. Your last one was pretty good, but then the episode that followed was a little medium because you were kind of not so hot on Blue Velvet.
Well, because the movie wasn't that good.
It's one of the best movies ever made. And moving on, we have we are going to be talking about John Wick today, all of them in honor of John Wick Chapter 4, and we'll be counting down some of our favorite revenge movies later on in the show. Gentlemen, shall we get started?
Yes. Yeah.
Steven, tell us who our special guest is.
This is JoJo.
Hey, everybody.
He lives with me, and we've been together since high school.
That's
not
true.
Like together, but we've bad boys for life. That.
Bad boys for life.
Bad Good boys one, for life, because you ain't going nowhere.
No.
Nope.
Can't be stopped now.
Cannot
be
nowhere.
Stopped now.
Do you know who the feature track is on that song? Do you know who is like the... It's like a... You know, Diddy featuring a couple other people. You know who one of those people is? It blew my mind when it popped up on my Spotify. Mark Curry of Hanging with Mr. Cooper fame.
Oh, nice.
He's featured on that song. I think
that
he
makes
just
me
says,
like it so much more.
I think when they go bad boys for life, he leans in on the for life part. I think that's the extent of his contribution to the song. But man, what a song it is.
And what a contribution.
Yeah. I liked it. I like the movies too.
Yeah, all three of them. Yeah, I'm into it. JoJo, you love John Wick, and you wanted to discuss John Wick with us. Why is this series so special to you?
I really just like, I'm a Keanu Reeves fan. I'll be honest with you.
Right on.
And also, I really just like the first one. And honestly, I have a lot of problems with the other ones.
Well, we will get into it. Yeah. We will definitely get into it. What's your favorite Keanu Reeves movie?
The Lake House.
Oof. Honestly, it's probably, I know they're very different, but it's probably a tie between the first Matrix and Speed for me.
Okay. Right on. Right on. I'm into it.
Oh, wait. And I have a really soft spot in my heart for Street Kings. Is a really good movie.
Oh, I forgot about that movie. And I
forgot
he was in it.
Dude, that's a fucking good movie, man.
Is that a David Ayer?
I have no idea, but it's
David
good.
Ayer. Oh, right on. It's the Christian Bale one, right? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Forrest Whitaker, Keanu's like some unhinged, like super cop guy. Okay. Like
Chris
always.
Evans is in this movie.
Yeah,
Chris,
dude.
That's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
Who I'm thinking
and
of.
It is. And Common, ironically enough, is also
in this. That is David Ayer, yes.
David Ayer. I got one part.
Terry
right.
Crews is in it.
Okay.
Sure.
Terry Crews is Pecs. Also
yeah,
in it.
Terry Crews is in it.
Their third build.
But strongly built. The have you seen a movie called Knock Knock?
No, almost, but no.
Okay. That one I can't say that everyone's
wait,
gonna
wait,
love
wait,
it.
Wait, 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 wait. What do you mean by almost?
I'm pretty sure like on whatever Netflix, I think, maybe. It was on there for a while, and it would pass by in my, you know, 2 hours of trying to figure out what I'm going to watch and then deciding not to watch shit. I would always like, it was always a runner though. It was always a runner in the many decisions.
I would say frontline it. You might not love the movie. I don't know, man.
It seems weird. And I feel like that's why I didn't actually do it.
It's like a soft remake of an older movie called, the hell is that? Sorry, I just got a notification on my computer. I know my McAfee's running out. It's a soft remake of a movie called, it's not Pieces. Oh, shit.
Ding Dong.
What's it called? Death Game. And whether you like the movie or not, I like it because it's a terrifying horror movie that descends into absolute chaos. But it is a very atypical performance from Keanu Reeves, which is why I think even if you don't like it, you'll be happy you checked it out.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, if that's something to, I would be very curious to hear your thoughts on it. But it's got it's him and Ana de Armas.
Oh, sure.
It's an Eli Roth movie. It's Ana de Armas at her most diabolical.
Oh, she's going to be playing the ballerina in a John Wick spinoff, so full circle.
Yeah. How do we feel spinoffs?
I'm excited for the spinoffs.
Yeah, I think I'm into it.
I'm into the world building and like exploring more. Because honestly, right now, the rules, I know we're going to get into it, seem very arbitrary, some of them for this world.
Let's get into it. Hit us with your issues with the rules of this world.
You didn't tell us what your favorite Keanu movie is.
Oh, word, dude.
Oh, my favorite Keanu movie?
I'm pointing to you.
Yeah. I can tell from the grid of windows on my screen. I think it actually probably, my favorite Keanu performance is probably Knock Knock. I really love that movie.
Mm. Wow.
But it's very on brand for me though, because it's just like a mean little horror movie. But
my actual favorite Keanu movie is The Replacements.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that a couple episodes ago during Warrior.
Sure.
Good one.
Shall we rank the Wicks? So we've seen all four of them now. What's everybody's ranking?
They go in order of their release.
Best to worst or worst to best?
From worst to first. So like John Wick 4 is number 4.
Nice.
3, 2, and 1.
Okay. Mine's all over the place. I think, and this pen's review for when I can see 4 a second time, because I've seen the other ones multiple times, but I think I am a 3-1-4-2.
Yeah, so you rank 4 lower than we expected.
Here's the thing, though. It also could be my favorite. I have to see it again. Because it's so, I love excess, and I think it's a very excessive movie.
It was definitely not my favorite.
To me, 3 is where like the formula is just executed. You know, 1 is like the cleanest, tightest, you know, most basic of the movies. 4 is absolutely just a total monster. And 2, despite being my least favorite, is amazing. But I think that's where the growing pains of expanding the world are felt most, is in 2. So I think it's like it's the jankiest one in that regard.
I disagree. I think this one is the jankiest one as far as world building goes. And there was a point, there was multiple points in this 3-hour film where I thought to myself, where did we go wrong?
Really?
So real quick though, can I give my
name? I want to hear Joe's ranking, because I'm assuming 1 is at the top.
Yeah, so I love 1 for its simplicity. And I honestly kind of wish it just stopped there.
Fair enough.
Also, I fucking hate 2. Really? Like, I hate 2. So for me, it's 2 is last. And then surprisingly, it would be 1, 4, 3, and 2 for me.
1, 4, 3, 2. Right on. I can respect it. Yours is very close to what mine is. See, for me, like, I agree that the simplicity of 1 is what sells it. But I think that the way that they push the envelope in terms of how action is shot and handled in movies, especially at a time where most action looks like shit, is worth the growing pains. When we have an overhead shot and he's shooting flaming shot out of a shotgun at multiple guys in a single bird's eye view long take, I gotta say,
that was awesome. That was so cool. Fucking cool.
I don't care what you gotta do to get me there, but that looks infinitely better than any fight scene in any superhero movie that has ever existed, I think.
And we saw the movie last night, and I leaned over to Joe and I whispered, I think this is a nod to the John Wick video game that came out.
Could be.
Because it was very similar to, like, it was a very top-down style.
Of, yeah,
like,
it really was.
Shots. And, like, then, like, you plan out all of your shots and movements and then, like, kind of hit play and see how...
Yeah, how it's executed.
Yeah.
But again, though, I feel like, see, and this is why, for me, if that's the reason that we all agree we're showing up for these movies is just for the clean, awesome, dope-ass action sequences, then, like, it doesn't have to be a fucking 3-hour movie. Like, I don't know exactly what the runtime is of John Wick 1, but like,
I think it's like 1 hour 45. It's pretty tight.
Exactly. Yeah. And I remember distinctly never thinking, when is this movie going to be over? It just felt like well-paced. I had like just enough to know, like, he's in some shit. He's a badass fucking dude. These people are like very powerful and he's going to fucking go get revenge. And I think that movie was short and sweet and great. And then I feel like they just like, yes, I'm down with the pushing the envelope thing too. But like, then if that's what we're showing up for, give me less of this like fluff shit.
Listen, my argument with 4, though, real quick, is that 4, even though it has a ton of runtime, I don't think there's a lot of fluff in there because most of the film is action. There's like one or two intercut scenes.
When she's like, you could join the family again if you go, it was almost like achievement unlocked, side quest, like a fucking side quest. And then I feel like that sequence, while it was dope, I've already seen 3 other fucking club shootings. Like 3
in
other
this series.
Right. And like, do you do it well? Absolutely you do. But also, like, I just don't need to see it for that long again. Like, you already did it.
See, I would argue though, like, whereas I agree, like, oh yeah, there's a lot of club scenes where people are getting killed and everyone just keeps on dancing. But right. I think when you look down at the styles of the action, that's just because it's housed in the club doesn't mean it's necessarily the same as previous stuff. Like the first film is
that
almost
was how
predominantly
wrote that lyric.
Yeah, yeah. In the club, it's a, you can find me in the club with a yeah. different yeah. styles
doing
of
previous
with different
stuff.
Of doing stuff that's right. in the previous stuff, but it's a different kind of karate with a different kind of gun. But yeah, to me, like, I guess it's just more of a taste thing, because to me, the more the merrier. Like, I don't care if it's in a nightclub on the top of a train or in a horse barn. I love that they're constantly like, he's got a new weapon. He's got a new fighting style to contend with. And when you're looking for that, I don't think they repeat really any 2 permutations twice. I was a little miffed that at the beginning of John Wick 4, some henchmen grabbed ninja stars and then they never showed up. I wanted some ninja star action, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. What are you going to do?
So I've got the definitive run times here for all 4 of them. John Wick 1.
Wait, can I guess? I want to guess them because I think I can do pretty good.
All right, I'll give you a plus minus 5. I'll go 7 minutes. You can get a plus minus 7 minutes.
All right, I'm going to say that John Wick 1 is 1 hour 45.
Hour 41.
Okay.
Perfect. Perfect length.
John Wick 2, I want to say, is 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Ooh, you're right on the cutoff, my friend. Remember, the easy mnemonic device. John Wick 2 is 2 hours and 2 minutes long.
Yep, 2 hours and 2 minutes. That was actually my next guess, as crazy as that sounds. John Wick 3, I want to say, is 2 hours 29 minutes.
You see, you're getting further away from the light here, my friend. 2 hours 11.
2 hours 11. Okay, yeah. And then John Wick 4, I'm pretty positive, is 2 hours 49.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
yeah,
I know that.
So kind of a really huge jump, not so much between 1, 2, and 3. You have about a half an hour in between those three movies.
Yeah. 1 to 3 is a big jump.
From 3 to 4, you jump a good 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you want to know why 2 is my least favorite?
No.
No?
No, yeah, go ahead, please.
Well, it's literally one part. It's the part where they have, so like, I'm totally, you know, it's John Wick. I can suspend like my
suspend disbelief,
right? Like, you know, and like, his suit's armored and he can take bullets and all this different shit and get like hit by cars like 6 or 7 times and like everything's okay. But when they're having, and the shootout in the club, I'll forgive that, loud music, people are on drugs, they're like fucking whatever.
Yeah.
But dude, the shooting in the fucking subway, silencers or no?
And silencers don't work that way.
And they don't. They don't work that way.
You know, neither do horses.
And I don't know. Neither does any of the shit. Right. It's like being upset with like, well, people can't fly, and you're talking about the Matrix. Like, well, we're talking about the fucking Matrix.
I think that part one is the most tethered to the real world. You know, with with the world expansion comes like an expansion of his abilities.
Yes,
almost.
I agree. Yes,
he gets tired fighting.
Yeah,
the reloads are more like my dad always used to say. Like, I think
movie's pretty clean with reloads.
Well,
I think so too. Actually,
John Wick 4 was not though.
I think John Wick 4 is more he just dispenses of weapons and acquires new weapons.
Which I enjoyed.
Because he always does. There was the coolest thing I think in the whole series is in the first one where he like knocks a guy and stuns him and then reloads his gun while the guy's stunned and then shoots him. And I remember that got a big response in the theater. And there's like a tweak on that in every movie, like where he like holds the gun backwards and then like checks it and pops it back into his thing. Like, I think... because they try to centralize his ability to do gunplay, I feel like across the series we're pretty clean, relatively speaking, on the reality of the reloads.
Yeah, and that was always something my dad would say. Like, you could tell if you counted every bullet, it was accounted for.
Yeah. But
that's something I definitely respect about the franchise for sure. And you know, I'm going to probably shit on a lot of stuff in this episode, but overall, you know, like Joe's saying, the first one, it will always hold a place in my heart, as you know, what this franchise could have ultimately been if they weren't trying to constantly one up themselves every time they went outside, you know.
It's interesting you say that though, because I remember when the first movie came out, the general response was, oh, I guess Keanu's gonna do a Taken. You know, because everybody did a Taken, like Sean Penn did The Gunman and no one saw it. And, you know, I Taken 2, Taken 3, like a bunch of different guys popped up to try and become the revenge guy. And so when Keanu did
the
that,
Gunman's
we were like,
a good movie, though, man.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. And but it's in like Colombiana and all the like things like that. And so I think they were like, oh, John Wick, this is Keanu Reeves doing that. And then it's not that, like, it scratches that itch, but I think it kind of rocked the world because it was the first movie to sort of focus on pre-production. You know, we all thought we were going to get a Taken riff, and then it turned out it was a stuntman basically putting his reel on film to wow everybody with what can be done if you choreograph your fights beforehand. If you're not taxed with, like, oh, I only have Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans for 1 week, so we got to just cut around that, you know? So I think the first one gets by with this ability that we were all ready to dismiss it, and then it turned out to be this like kind of game changer instead.
Well, my favorite part of the first one was easily the world building.
Yeah,
and like, cause I like when you think about the golden rule of how to build a world while it unfolds around you, like Back to the Future for me is always the gold standard.
Yeah, show don't tell.
John Wick is like a very close second for me. The first one is, because at that point it was like, wow, there's this whole fucking underworld that is right under our nose that we know nothing about. There's rules, there's a hierarchy, there are people that are a part of it, and like this is their day-to-day lives, and like we get an inside look about this. And
rules,
then,
Mr. Wick, it's what separates us from the dogs.
And Ian McShane is a phenomenal part of the series.
Really, really, really. And he got favorite fucking parts.
And he acted the fuck out of those dentures he had mashed in his mouth
The problem with that world building is that they in the later installments, now they're using it as a crutch to retcon in why John Wick is fucked this time extra hard.
Yeah.
You know, and like even in this one where it's like, oh, well, you forgot about the old ways, didn't you? And it's like, or did you fucking forget, or did you just fucking write it down? Lost writers.
You know, though, I feel like another series could be given that same criticism, even amongst the original Star Wars trilogy. I know George Lucas says, like, oh, I had it all planned. And it's like, no, the fuck,
you didn't.
Leia and Luke were going to be in love. And then you came up with the brother-sister thing 5 years later. So, you know, fucking calm down. And But I think that there's a lot of that in Star Wars too. I think that's just a method of world building. Granted, I do think there's some sloppiness. Like in 4, it's never explained how he's able to just hop from country to country. Whereas in 3, he has to cut off a finger just to get out of the country.
Yeah.
You know, like that's like kind of a weird thing that sort of bugged me about 4. There's stuff like that. But I think that as far as making the world that big, it's pretty cleverly done. Like the first instance of it was in the first movie after he kills a bunch of dudes in his house. And then the cops show up and you're like, oh, what's he going to do? And then the cop's like, working again, John? And it's like, oh, yeah, shit.
Where was that guy in this one? Ah! I missed him.
And then, so, you know, like that's the first time the seed was planted of growing the world. But I would agree that I think that it's ridiculous in the ways that it builds the world. But to me, it comes down to, we have two options. Either we embrace those and get 4 kick-ass movies, or we don't embrace those and stop at 1. And whereas, Joe, I know you disagree and say stop at 1. I don't know, I really value all 4. This might be my favorite action series, like, ever.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's just so impressive. But, you know, to each his own,
of course. I do like how they branched out into, and they did this in almost every chapter, is they branched out into other continentals. Because, think about Harry Potter, right? All we saw was Hogwarts, but we knew there was other schools out there.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
You always wonder, like, what are those other schools like? And
yeah,
in
yeah.
John Wick, they give us a very good bird's eye view of how it goes. And, like, every continental has its own, look and feel and, you know, its own vibe. And
but I also like they all also maintain, like, a certain standard. Like, yeah. The rules are the same in each one. Which I think like is also a good part of their world building and stuff. And also like I was late to the John Wick party. Like I did not see that in theaters. I like happened upon it like on HBO. And like it was just so fucking awesome. Like I loved it. And the first time he like goes to the Continental and like the whole thing, just like I really, that's awesome. You know, but I do feel like there's a bit of them chasing those moments in the other ones. Like,
but I think like, it chases the tightness of the first one, but I think the first one is inferior in terms of individual action sequences to all of them.
I love the house scene and the bathhouse scene. And then,
I have some news.
I think
here.
All those scenes are cool, but like, it's not as big of a stylistic flourish of him sword fighting on a motorcycle, say, you know, like that's like the, right. You know, escalation from there. The one thing I do think that helps keep the world building manageable is that no matter how big the world gets, the one constant across all of it is that everybody in this world respects the fuck out of John Wick because he is that good. And he's the guy who got out. Like I love that no matter what, every continental has their rules, but they're all willing to flex the rules a little bit for John Wick because he's that fucking good. And I think having that looseness based around the fact that he's so damned professional and so damned skilled that he gets just a little special consideration, I think that's a fun constant throughout all of the continentals. Because even in part 4 at the beginning when he goes to, is that the Tokyo Continental? He goes to, I think, Osaka. Osaka Continental. He gets there and immediately the dude's just like, I'm gonna deny the high table and protect John Wick just for a little bit longer. And it was just out of straight up because I respect him so goddamn much. And I think that's very cool and helps manage the growing pains that I think we all feel with the expansion of the world.
Yeah, that dude, who's that dude? The manager of the Osaka Hotel?
I just know him as the guy from Lost. I can pull up his name. Because he was in Lost.
He's also in 47 Ronin with Keanu.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the other movie that nobody saw.
I saw that movie. It was okay.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't see it.
It was Hiroyuki Sanada.
Yeah, he name. Was. He's. Let me tell you something about his ability to fight on camera is not very good.
You don't think so?
He was lagging. Good, right? He was lagging with the rest of the crew there, in my opinion.
I mean, I think everyone's going to look like they're lagging when a 50-something-year-old Donnie Yen shows up acting 30 years younger than he is.
Yeah,
Donnie Yen is someone that, like, the world America has only just caught up to Donnie Yen, and it's a shame because he's been doing killer shit for 35 years. And so for them to finally catch up with him now that he's an older man is heartbreaking. And then he shows up in John Wick 4 looking and acting like he did 20 years ago. It is phenomenal what he accomplishes in John Wick 4.
He's also a Chinese nationalist, though.
I mean, if we're going to nitpick, we lose all of our martial artists.
I'm just saying that's like the equivalent of you know, somebody on the side of Trump at this point.
For
the
Chinese. I mean, so is Jackie Chan, but
we gotta love him. Bruce Willis. So, I mean, you know, what are we going to fucking split hairs about?
Well, he doesn't have hairs to split.
I don't want
to
lose Die Hard. And that's true. He does have
Earlier, I said I had some news that I wanted.
Yeah, what's the news?
There is no news. Google fucked up. It was, I was looking at the cast list, and I wanted to get Shamir Anderson's name right. He plays Mr. Nobody, who was another great addition.
Awesome.
Mm.
And then Google said he was also in John Wick Chapter 1, but after I did some deep digging, Google was mislabeling movies and actors in them. So
yeah, well. That's fake news.
But that would have been cool if he was somehow in Chapter 1 and we like nobody noticed him and then he comes back for 4.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That would be cool. But again,
that would
have
been really cool. Yeah.
This is one of those circumstances where John Wick 1, it was very clear that they did not know whether they would get a sequel and may not have planned to have sequels. And then when it, you know, took off huge, they really ran with it.
There was a moment in, so this guy has a dog, which is cool. And there was a moment in the theater where somebody pointed a gun at the dog and was about to fire, and Joe just yells out loud, "No!"
No, I screamed it. And I swear to God, I would have fucking left.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we both agreed. We were like, I would have left too.
I think
also,
that's
when
the
dog got hit by the car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like how, nope, and I said don't. This. I said this in the parking lot last night. I was like, I like how when the dog got hit by the car, the camera panned over and gave us a good, 10-second shot of the dog being alive
and thriving
as good as he was. He pulled a John Wick and got hit by a car and didn't feel a goddamn thing.
Yeah, I think it's smart what they do with dogs in this movie, because that first dog, that is one of the most heartbreaking animal deaths that's ever been on camera.
Absolutely.
Everybody in the planet was like, well, yeah, of course he has to go kill 500 people over the next week. That one guy killed his dog. That earns every ounce of justified vengeance, because we all love to avenge the death of a dog. We hate seeing a dog die. But I like that this series keeps using dogs, never kills another one because that would kind of deflate the original one's death, but is always dancing around the thematic idea of what separates us from the dogs is rules.
Yeah.
And so I think that having dog characters woven throughout, dog characters that humans are responsible for, and, you know, dog characters that sort of, you know, represent each of their owners in a specific way, I think is very smart thematically. You know, especially when you add that, you know, like there's all this imagery of like cool watches and cool cars and cool suits and all that. And so even at the end of the day, all of these guys who are like, we have rules, that's what makes us better, are still slaves to the idea that they're doing all of this just to seek the acquisition of wealth and stuff. You know, it's just an acquisition of image and wealth and stuff like that, which the dogs, despite their rules, don't have. And I think that, you know, tossing that back and forth throughout the series is very thematically smart. And it would be hindered if they killed another dog in the process.
And that's basically what we were talking about before. Like, that's why we would have walked out of the theater, because it was like, that would have been irresponsible and stupid to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't have walked out, though, because I would have been like, damn, that dog exploded. So crazy. Action, baby. But
also, I just don't see, Dan, it seems like you like that they get like more and more grandiose.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, like him like fighting like on a motorcycle or whatever, right?
Like, if we're gonna have sequels, then they have to go bigger.
I get that. But I just like, so another example of this for me is like the first Die Hard versus like the last Die Hard. Right. I don't like John McClane is an absolute fucking badass. He's the man. He's going to get it done. But like even in fucking, and I like this one. What is it?
Live Free or Die
Hard. Live
Free
or Die Hard. Yeah.
I like that movie a lot, but he's unshakable.
Movie.
But,
but the part where he like flies, and I love this scene too, but it's just so absurd that I'm like, where he drives the car into the fucking into the helicopter after getting hit by cars.
Get to the chopper. All
this different shit. And I'm just like, dude, like he's good, but he's human. Like in the first one, like he gets.
He was afraid to fly in the first one.
Yes. And he was afraid to fly the plane. Even in Die Hard of Vengeance, which I still think is bigger and better than the first one, he's still very human to me. Like, but in these other two that they like come back and I'm like, yeah, they're dope. And I saw them and I do like them, but I don't like how all of a sudden he's like a fucking superhero.
Yeah, like, I agree.
And like John Wick, dude, at one point, like this motherfucker, the first time he got hit by a car, I'm like, okay, okay, he's all right. Second time, I'm like, what the fuck? Then he gets hit by a car like two more times. And I'm just like, dude, how are you alive? Like, you're just like, you are dead. Like, you're not moving.
I agree that it seems that he gets more invincible and sometimes it does stretch believability. But whereas
absurd.
What I will give John Wick credit for against Die Hard is that Die Hard doesn't actually try to write around it. He just is invincible. In John Wick, they write ideas in like, oh, yeah, he is sort of bulletproof because of this suit. You know, he can withstand damage because he was given a pill that, you know, makes him ignore the pain and act, you know, harder. That's what they did in 3. So like, even though I agree that it goes beyond what any human body can withstand, I respect that they at least make the attempt to write reasons why into the script.
Sure, sure, sure.
Which, like, by the standard set by Die Hard, they don't actually have to do. But I appreciate that they do, you know? And whether that mileage is one-to-one and fully earned can certainly be argued. Because, like, you know, spoiler alert time. I think it's very appropriate that 4 ends the way it does to that end, because there's just no recovering from this. Yeah,
I want more Kane anyway, dude. I'm good. Like,
oh yeah,
more nobody. But
yeah,
the most egregious crime against what we're talking about right now was there's two of them. One is when he leaves that murder house, the top down house, by getting jettisoned from a third story window. Hitting a van on his back and then rolling around like, oh, and then just getting right up and walking.
Yeah.
Which he already survived 2 days ago at the end of part 3.
Yeah.
He did another one of those. So he's feeling it.
And also then, right before that, he got hit by like 5 fucking cards.
Yeah.
It's true.
And, well, because
it's an expensive suit, though.
I made a joke when that happened because it was me, Joe, and then our friend Megan. And I made a joke and I was like, well, time to go finish the fight, I guess. I'm feeling it again.
Yeah.
Shit, now, walk it off.
And then they're like, all right, now you got to walk up 20 flights of stairs and fight people your entire way up. And then this is the second egregious crime. When he gets to the top of the stairs to go to the final sunrise battle. And then that big Russian dude just throws him back down.
Marco Zaror, another classic action guy.
I don't care. He's Russian. And so he gets tossed down the stairs.
I believe he's actually Brazilian.
I don't care. He gets tossed down the stairs.
You were close.
He just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling like Limp Bizkit.
Oh, my God. Why?
To the point where... like we had people in our theater audibly laughing about it.
Hell yeah. Well, let's take a break there and we will be back shortly to talk more John Wick.
All right, sure.
Hey everybody, it's me, Dan. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if the ads on the podcast are actually working because I don't think we have enough listeners to be able to activate ads. Now, this is partially my fault because of the time that I took off from doing Movie, but that doesn't mean I can't record an ad for the podcast itself, which is what you are listening to right now. So make sure you follow I Like to Movie at MovieMovieCast on all of the things. Please subscribe. Please tell your friends. It would be very helpful if you could subscribe specifically on Spotify. That really beefs up the numbers. If you heard a little bell jingling, that's my cat's collar because she came running over because she can't let me record a fucking commercial in peace. Hi, Doris. Hi, Stinky. But please do all of that and check out our other show, Hot Property, at Hot Property Pod on all of the things. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll get you back to the show. We are part of the Hot Property Podcast Network. Peace.
My welcome, favorite part.
Welcome back, everybody. From our little
welcome
break.
Back again.
Welcome back again. And my during the break, part... I looked it up. Marco Zaror is Chilean.
All right, that's great. My favorite part about the giant hiatus we just had because Dan's computer is a piece of shit is that we were able to watch John Wick 4 in its entirety again, all 3 hours.
Well, at least I didn't think a Chilean man was Russian.
Well, he comes off as Russian in the fucking movie, doesn't he?
No,
he doesn't. You guys shooting incendiary rounds? No. Chill out here.
Yo, those incendiary rounds.
They were dope.
The director, Chad Stahelski, mentioned in an interview that I saw that the incendiary rounds were used because when he was shooting the overhead shot, he was like, from this angle, you can't really see gunplay. So in the absence of gunplay, let's have bullets that light the person on fire. And that should do it. And very smart move. And that was, as you mentioned earlier in the episode, Stephen, that was very much lifted straight out of video games.
I thought they did that because they ran out of things to do.
I mean, evidently they didn't, because at that point
they said, how can we make this even more crazy?
I mean, to me, that's the goal of this movie is escalation. And now that we're in spoilers, to escalate to the point where John Wick just is straight up dead, I think is the way to go.
Yeah, I honestly like that. That he died. I think that was appropriate. And the way that it was always going to end.
Yeah.
Or should end. But yes, can we talk about the damage again really quickly?
Yes, please do.
So I can appreciate that his suit protects him from bullet damage. Mm. And I can even say that I don't care because of this universe that we're in. That, like, you know, in reality, again, I don't care. But like, if you had a bulletproof Kevlar vest, which would be much thicker than that suit, it would still not feel great.
Yeah, it would hurt
a lot. Yeah. And he's getting shot a lot.
A lot, yeah.
But I'm not even upset with that. That's fine. The suit is not a fucking Iron Man suit. He's like not RoboCop. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's my problem.
Yeah,
like,
he's got internal things damage. Like that.
Right, like, dude, like, you are hurt now. Like, that would not. He should dodge it or something. Even that's kind of unrealistic, but I feel like then at least, like, I feel like Iron Man gets hit by a car or like whatever. I'm like, all right, dude, well, he's in an Iron Man suit. You know what I mean? Or like if we're watching Lord of the Rings and they get like some crazy shit with like, I don't know. And then like Gandalf does some magic shit. I'm like, oh, right, magic, word.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Well, I will say this. I think it gets a lot of mileage from he's just toughing it out and that he's hurt, he's injured, but he's so singularly focused on getting this job done that he just plays through it. Now, is that at all even remotely feasible? Absolutely not. No.
But I had that exact thought, and so I'm with you, Dan.
Now, here's my question, though, if we're going to talk about the logistics of the reality of this movie.
Sure.
Like, why anything? Like, where's the money? And who is, like, yes, this subculture of hitmen exists, but they seem to only ever be employed to kill one another. So, like, what is the main, like, what's the level beyond that, beyond the table? Like, you know, John Wick, maybe if they're like, oh, I hire him to kill a president, but it's like, no, they hire him to just kill another guy who's gets hired to kill people. And like, it seems to be a completely like insular economy that they have. And they're just trading little bitcoins as they go. And I struggle to grasp who is the ultimate financier here. Like, who's paying rent on the Continental? Because, like, yeah, sure, you can have your own economy. But, like, that building is in New York. It's not a cheap building. What's going, like, you know, who is the guy? And they blew it up.
Right, like, and then they're like, we're just going to rebuild it. No problem. Exactly no problem. How you wanted.
Like, and they all just kill each other. And it seems weird. It seems unsustainable.
That is weird. I never thought of
and
that.
I'm no economist. I work in logistics and comedy. I feel like money needs to come into play somewhere.
Yeah.
What they do is they have a bunch of Keanu bucks.
Yeah.
And that's how they pay for things.
Yeah.
That's why everyone's after him all the time. And they need a
stronger than the
when
dollar,
he dies, he drops all of his Keanu bucks and then you can pick them up.
Yeah. They shoot out of him like Sonic rings when he gets
you're too late though. Steve and I already hit the gravesite.
Yeah. That's fine. Look, so there I have nowhere to spend Keanu bucks.
This movie could have been
The Matrix.
Here's my bit. Yeah. Here's my bit. This movie could have been 2 hours and 3 and 4 minutes if they just cut out half of the stairway scene.
Oh my gosh.
But why would you do that? Yes. That's like saying I could finish dinner quicker if my steak was a third of the size.
At the end, when he dies on the church steps, I fully expected him to just roll out of view of the camera.
That would have been awesome.
Start rolling back down the stairs.
I'm a little pissed that we didn't get to see his body, not because I wanted to, but because they're already talking about, like, can we pull another sequel out of this? And as much as I'm the guy who likes escalations, I don't care what excuse you have to make in order to get me more action, I feel like spinoff territory is the way to go. I am so satisfied with John Wick having essentially gone on a suicide mission that lasted four days for him, 10 years for us. If they bring him back from the dead, of course I'm going to go see it. But and I feel like it was revealed, like his death was revealed to us in a way that, you know, much like the Fast series can pretty easily be undone with a couple swipes of the pen. I hope to God they don't do it. I was saying
on the way home last night, I want to see a Kane and Nobody like buddy cop movie.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I would see that movie.
Yeah,
Nobody was such a great character to add.
Yeah, he was really cool. Yeah,
I really love the best gadget scene. I'm waiting for the price to come up. Like, that's fucking cool.
And the best gadget scene is when he like takes his backpack and puts it over him to reveal a full Kevlar vest with two guns already inside of it.
They have so many cool tools.
They
have the best tools.
Get the John Wick cool tools. That's like a Saturday morning cartoon.
It's like toys. Chuck Norris is kicking jeans.
Yeah.
They need the John Wick bulletproof suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, because I agree.
Ninja stars that you're never going to use in the movie.
That made me so mad. Chekhov's ninja stars never got paid off. But no, I agree with you guys.
Chekhov's ninja stars is the new name of my band, by the way.
Oh, there you go. The escalations and the world expansion, I think that there are growing pains, and I think that they're more heavily felt in John Wick 2 and John Wick 4. And so while I do appreciate the tightness of the first one, I feel like I've been so starved of actual good action sequences that I don't mind the growing pains, even though I was pretty severely bothered that he can just country hop when in part 3 he has to forsake his entire family in order to get, you know, across one ocean. But
I'd also like to stress that, like, we're being really nitpicky here, right?
Of course.
Like, I go to see these movies to, like, they are always a fun romp, like you said, that highlight action. And like, I mean, if you're going to see the next, like, groundbreaking, like, cinema, like, you're going to the wrong movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just mean, like, if you're going for, like, something deeper than what it is at face value, like, it's silly. We're nitpicking right now, but I mean, they're great. They're great movies.
That's like, if they do come out with 5 and it is with Keanu Reeves, I'll fucking see it. You know,
of course.
Yeah.
I'm still watching fucking Ant-Man movies, and
but
shit
I want
now.
Them to bring Jason Mantzoukas back. That was the biggest crime from they didn't bring him back, and I was really upset.
He's like, John Wick's out there killing everybody. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. And we're gonna do, you know, that's his whole thing. I do feel like though, more so than many movies that exist just to give us action, I think that the story stuff here is, even if it's imperfect, it's head and shoulders above, you know, a Taken 3. You know, like, the way to expand the Taken movies is, I think the way that they do it here, it's a pretty Herculean effort in world expansion, and tastes may vary on it, but I think in terms of, like, action cinema, John Wick and the Mission Impossible movies are really, like, kind of kings right now. Even the Fast movies have petered off in their ability to, like, keep us coming back for, you know, like, it's like, you don't, like, the way of explaining things has just gotten so tired. Whereas, like, Wick, I think, even if you don't love it, the effort in the script is there, which is more than so many action movies can say.
Does anybody want to guess what the highest Rotten Tomato score in this series is?
I know that they've all got to be fresh.
They are all fresh. I'll say that. And there's, I will give you another hint. Let's go through 1 to 4 and we'll say, but I will say none of these go under 80%.
Okay. That's cool.
So John Wick 1, what's the Rotten Tomato score?
85.
Jojo? 83.
86. Point to Dan. John Wick 2.
83.
JoJo?
85.
89. Point to Joe. Nice. Tie game. John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum.
94.
90.
90. It is another 89.
Oh, nice.
Point to Joe. John Wick Chapter 4 Antebellum.
96.
JoJo?
94.
It is exactly 94.
Nice. Nice. Did anybody notice the call sign of the radio station in John Wick 4?
I noticed it, but I couldn't make heads or tails of what it meant.
Okay, it was WUXIA, which spells Wuxia. Wuxia is a type of martial arts movie. That's the martial arts that are characterized in stuff like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh,
or
cool.
If to reference Donnie Yen, Iron Monkey.
That's cool.
It's right, essentially right. Like wire work karate. And so, yeah, that was just a throwaway reference to genre.
When they dropped that, I was like, that's too many letters for a call sign.
Yeah, like it's got to mean something.
Oh, really quickly, because I forgot it. When I don't know, we moved on quickly, but when you guys said it's his like basically his sheer will that like keeps him momentum to like finish this mission, I do agree that the movie, since the first one, did a really good job of building the legend of like the Baba Yaga, and that he like basically you wanted freedom, I gave you a task that was supposed, you were supposed to die, so I wouldn't even have to worry about that, but you actually did it, so we had to give you your fucking freedom, like. Which again, you know, plays into this like John Wick like doesn't even play by most of these like fucking rules set out in this world, and then he's still like given a pass, but it's because he's just that dude.
He's that good,
you know.
He's just so goddamn good.
Which I do think they do a good job of keeping that going.
It is kind of funny though that it's like in the first one, it's like he pissed off the Russians, and then by the end of the fourth one, it's just like the universe,
he pissed off the world,
the universe is trying to kill him. I had a note here. So I do like that that Donnie Yen showed up, and I do like that Donnie Yen got a classic Donnie Yen move. This is an audio podcast, so no one will see it, but you guys will see it, where he's fighting a guy and then he revs up a punch before hitting him. That is a classic Donnie Yen move, and I'm so glad that they squeezed it into John Wick 4, because he did the punch.
Oh, that was so like, cool too.
That's classic. That's it, man. But as soon as he pulled one back and revved it up, that is classic Yen, and it is a goddamn grand slam anytime he pulls it out. I'm so glad it was in there.
Honestly, when he enters that staircase scene to get to the battle before sunset, that's the best part of it. That sequence for me anyway, like I love that, like them fighting together, and like that was cool.
I just love that John Wick always gets to the top of the mountain and then finds out that the mountain's that much higher, so I love when he finally gets to the top of the steps and then they just throw him down, and it's like you cannot catch a break, sir. You will never catch one break. You have to fight these steps again. Beautifully done.
I'm really glad that Donnie Yen showed up too, because he was supposed to be in this movie.
He almost didn't show up. He had to go campaign for the CCP.
What if he just didn't show up for our viewing? That would have been upsetting.
Like, why is he punching
because
nobody?
As you know, every showing of a movie is a live performance done by the actors every time.
Correct.
When I was a little kid, before I understood how music videos worked, I was like, wow, they had to play it exactly the same as they did on the radio when they pointed the camera at them. Like it didn't occur to me that track mixing existed. I was like 6. Also, gotta love the inclusion of first Clancy Brown as the Harbinger.
That was Clancy Brown.
And then I liked Bill Skarsgård as the Marquis.
Yeah, he did a good
best
job.
Best villain of the
really
series.
Good representative of the table.
Really
kind of reminded me of the what was their name in the third one? The who came in to fix everything. Elder. No, the high table rep who came in to fix everything, the adjudicator. Very, very much in line with the adjudicator. But what is his name? Oh, God. Why am I? Scott Adkins as the poker dealing guy that he fights in the nightclub.
Oh yeah, man.
And they put him in fat mobster makeup, which is really a lot of fun. Scott Adkins has been dying for an American breakthrough. He revolutionized the Universal Soldier movies by turning them into his Boyka boxing movies. He's like one of the best on-screen fighters. So to see him in a mainstream release rather than, you know, like Accident Man or Accident Man 2, which are great, was very cool to see. I love Scott Adkins.
Yeah, well, that was awesome. Yeah.
The what was this? So my question to you guys is, what is it about revenge movies that makes revenge so exciting to watch on screen? I think it's universally understood that revenge is not really a great policy if you really think about it. But what makes it so cathartic and good on screen?
Because you shouldn't do it ever.
Yeah.
But it feels good to watch somebody else do it.
Right. I feel like it's one of those things, like it's the idea of it, like the power fantasy of it all. Like it's the same reason for me anyway. Like I play like video games where I'm like almost indestructible, can like run around the world and like do whatever you want. There's like no consequences. It's like
you're a regular John.
You can't live that way. That would be absolutely insane. But like it's fun idea.
It's pretty fun. I do like that John Wick kind of has it both ways, because like you can't live that way. You can make it about a week like he did, and then you will get executed by a blind man on the top of the steps under the purview of Clancy Brown. You started to say something, Steven.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I had to wait for my light to come back on. there was a point in my life where I was like, during the pandemic, where I was like, I'm just going to fucking get revenge on everybody. And I was like, I'll just sit down and watch John Wick again.
Yeah, it's the way to go.
There you go. Yeah, much better.
So, question for you, the classic phrase revenge is a dish best served cold. I don't know what it means because I have two separate meanings and I want to know which one you think is the accurate one. So revenge is a dish best served cold. Are they saying that it should be served cold-blooded, meaning if you're going to dish revenge, leave emotion out of it and get the job done? Or are they saying revenge is a dish best served cold, meaning let it sit for a while, and if you still want revenge after your rage has chilled, then proceed.
Oh, wow.
I like the last one, but what I take it as is you're going to die.
Yeah, like I prefer the second one because it's nicer. You're
going to turn cold.
I think it's probably intended in the first meaning, but I don't know. I actually don't know what what the definitive answer is on that.
JoJo?
I don't know. I think it probably is more the first one. I like the second one.
Second one's nicer. Although then again, the second one kind of has a fucked up angle, because if your rage cools but you still want revenge, I feel like that speaks to a sour mental state, as opposed to, you know, like if you're still going to reserve the revenge after it's cold, could be
actually
bad news.
I looked it up. The meaning of the term revenge is a dish best served cold is referring to revenge being better when it is long awaited and feared for a period of time rather than occurring right away. You were almost there, but much, much more sinister than what you were thinking.
It's so evil. It's delicious.
Your revengee has time to fucking think about what the goddamn did.
Yeah. Okay. I'm into that. Any final thoughts on John Wick 4 before we move to
like 3 years before you bring Keanu back and like build the world otherwise, and then we'll be back for Johnny.
I don't want Johnny back. I want spinoffs. And honestly, I don't even really want spinoffs. I kind of would like to just give Chad Stahelski a new action movie to throw his style into, and I think that's the move, but I'll take spinoffs. I mean, I'll take whatever.
Yeah.
I'll take more Kane stuff, yeah.
I want more nobody.
I like that his name is Kane and he carries a cane.
Yeah, I like it and don't like it.
Yeah.
They should have cast Michael Caine.
Michael Caine. I'm here to fight John Wick.
Michael Caine plays Kane with a cane indeed.
Should Michael Caine just getting hit by cars and still fighting even though he's 100 years
old? That's believable. That's believable to me, though.
I'm walking over here.
If you don't see that, I'm walking in the street. Then you hit me with your car.
Hey, Mr. Baba Yaga, ain't it? Oh, I just wanted to say, too, because I sort of said it earlier, but I was supremely bothered by Ian McShane's new teeth, because I was watching the movie notice, going,
and now I'm not gonna be able to unsee it.
Dude, they're like clearly new dentures, and he's such a powerhouse actor that he's able to act past them, but it was a chore. Because I'm watching it, I'm going, I know this is only supposed to be like a week, but this series is a decade old now. You know, it's amazing how little everyone has aged. And then Ian McShane starts talking past his dentures. I was like, he's aged. He lost all his teeth in the interim. And then, of course, shout out to Lance Reddick, who has a couple more movies. Plenty more movies coming down the pipeline. He is in The Continental, but who did not survive the series, and the actor recently passed and was really just a tremendous talent. So
I'm glad they didn't make the death scene in this movie very visceral or upsetting.
Yeah, yeah, I wonder if maybe they maybe there was more to it and they just kind of quickened it because it was so fresh.
Maybe
there was definitely a conversation like, do we leave this in?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think it was handled nicely. I mean, I loved that character, and I think that is the death that he would have had.
Now and, I am nitpicking, yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad that somehow, like 2 days after he died, enough phone calls were made to get the dedicated to Lance Reddick title card inserted into the movie at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because that was there, and that was much appreciated. And it was one of those moments, because he was like, that was a hearty loss. When that happened, I was like, God damn it, I want this movie to rock, but now I'm upset.
Well, yeah. he also did the voice of Joe and I, one of Joe and I's favorite pastime video games, Destiny.
Destiny, yeah.
Oh yeah. He's got like a huge following.
Commander Zavala. Yeah.
Which he also loved to play.
Loved it, yeah, yeah.
That's so cool. He's the man. I mean, Cedric Daniels on The Wire is like a top 10 TV character for me. He was so good. But also Reggie on Always Sunny in the Shah Dynasty. I'm working on my anger management.
He's got a really
skills.
Good bit, actually, where he plays Baba Yaga in American Horror Story.
Really? Oh, right on.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that. I've been meaning to catch up on that show.
I don't remember what season, but it's the one, whatever, witchcraft and voodoo is involved or something.
Probably the New Orleans one, because that's all they talked about.
Yes, it is the New Orleans one. It is.
I saw some landmarks from it.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, because I was in New Orleans. I went on a tour, and they're like, does anyone watch American Horror Story? And in the tour group, everyone was like, no. He's like, well, this building was in it. We're like, cool.
We got to get to these lists, man. We got to move along.
All right, it was fine.
Joe has no less than 25 movies about revenge he wants to talk about.
Well, we're only doing 5, so you gotta kill your darlings. Although I have managed to squeeze in 6 because I have 2 of them together. We can do some honorable mentions.
As our guest, you can go first.
Yeah, we're gonna count down our top 5 favorite or just some notable revenge movies. So I'm
gonna give my top 5 really quick, and it's gonna sound more
We take turns.
Yeah, hit it with number 5.
Number 5.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then we take turns. Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, this is so hard. All right.
That makes it so much easier.
Old Boy.
All right. Old boy.
Good. Old Boy. Good.
I like Old Boy is on my list, but now I can pull an honorable mention off of my other list because Old Boy was going to be my number one. I like that Old Boy is a, it's a revenge movie.
Wait,
that
which
you don't...
one?
The Park Chan-wook one.
I like the other one.
The Spike Lee one, really?
That's why I asked.
Well, then it's not the same. Well, why do you like that one so much?
I don't know. I just do.
Hey, that's as valid an answer as any.
Because if I may be so bold, Joe does love Josh Brolin a lot, as we all do.
I do.
Yeah. I don't think that was like a terrible remake. It was just a movie that I don't think need to be remade. But
plus, Elizabeth Olsen exposes her breasts in that movie.
I forgot she was in that. I haven't seen that one since the theater, but I've seen the original Old Boy so many times. But
the
I like
Scarlet
that that's
Witch
a,
bangs Thanos.
That's a revenge movie, but you don't realize that it's a different revenge movie until the end. And I think that's very cool.
It's so fucked up.
Yeah, that throws you on your ass. You're like, he's got to get his revenge. Oh, he's being gotten revenged on.
I watched the original one on a date night. That was not a good date night movie, y'all.
Yeah, that's it. No.
I watched that at a film festival, and it was funny because they still served beer in bottles at this theater. And so throughout the whole movie, you'd hear, clink, fuck, clink, because people would drop their beers and would roll to the front of the theater. And then the very next day, I went back for another movie. And from that moment forward, they always pour beer into plastic cups. You cannot get beer in a bottle at this theater anymore. And I was there the day the decision was made, and it was made during Old Boy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Should we keep moving right along?
Yeah. Keep moving right along. My number five is a double feature here of like the two best rape revenge movies ever made. Ms. 45 by Abel Ferreira and Thriller, A Cruel Picture. The latter, which features some actual pornography in it. But they're both like really hardcore, really fucked up rape revenge movies with sordid backstories and troubled stars. But Miss 45 is probably the most well-directed rape revenge movie you'll ever see. And Thriller is just like, it's fucked up for fucked up sake, but I think it ultimately proves to be pretty thematically strong in the way that it uses filth, which is no easy feat. And I'd highly recommend both, and I'd also never recommend either to anybody because they're hardcore.
Yeah, I never heard of them, and I'll never watch them.
Oh, man.
I'm going to agree with Steven on this one. I'm sorry, man. That is just not a niche. I am...
They don't have to apologize.
You know.
I got them on my
brings
shelf.
Which brings me to my number five movie, which is kind of a rape revenge movie, but Promising Young Woman.
Oh, right on.
Okay.
That movie was really good. I love Carey Mulligan in as like an evil role. Not an evil role, but like an angry role. Because normally she's like America's sweetheart or Britain's sweetheart, whatever you want to call her. And seeing her in just like a very different and more gritty role where she's like plotting the death of someone and ultimately fails at it, which is the lesson of why we don't actually revenge in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because
no, the lesson is don't fail.
All right. Well, you know what I mean? But I when I first saw that movie, I was like, holy shit. And Max Greenfield of New Girl fame plays the ultimate kind of like douchebag she's trying to kill.
And Bo Burnham, the nice guy who isn't so nice.
Well, no, he's a genuine dude.
There's a reveal later on in the movie.
Not that I remember. Because Max Greenfield was the bad guy.
Yeah. I also could be misremembering. I just remember by the end, Bo Burnham did not look as good as he seemed to be up until then.
I think that Bo Burnham was like the nice dude who was not given the time of day because all men are evil, based on Carey Mulligan's point of view and warranted point of view.
Yeah, I feel like there was, I've only seen it the once. I feel like there's a second reveal, but I don't remember, so I can't speak on it. But Academy Award winning script. Gotta love it. That was a good movie.
JoJo?
All right. Number four is the Django.
Yeah. Django Unchained or classic Django?
Yeah.
Nice.
Django Unchained.
That is a good one.
Yeah. Any further thoughts on that?
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I got a lot here.
What do you like about the revenge aspect of that film?
I mean, he goes out and gets revenge. That's what we're fucking talking about here, right? Like,
I think one of my
What favorite... do you like about these revenge movies? That they get revenge.
Yeah. One of my favorite aspects of that movie is that it is a revenge, it's a rescue thriller first, tinged with a large scale revenge. He's just trying to get back at the white man. But it's like a rescue thriller because he's got to get Kerry Washington's character freed from Candyland. But after Dr. King gets killed and he gets captured, then Dr. King Schultz, then it becomes like a hardcore revenge movie when he comes back to Candyland and he is titularly unchained. But I love the mini revenge movie before Dr. King Schultz gets killed when he's off scot-free. He does not want to shake Calvin Candy's hand. And when Calvin Candy will not let him leave without shaking his hand, a mini revenge movie happens where he's like, I'm willing to die to kill this guy more than I'm willing to shake his hand. And that is so cool.
And it just turns into he's like, I'm sorry.
So maybe, okay, to answer your question, Steve, and not brush it off, I think that the reason that's one of my favorite revenge movies is it's like all the fucking actors do such a dope ass fucking job.
Yeah.
From start to finish. I loved all characters. I don't even think I could pick a favorite fucking character or a least favorite character because some of them are so fucking vile, like the bad guys. Like, I mean, DiCaprio does such a good job whatever. I the think whole thing is
that's like great. A top tier Sam Jackson role too.
Oh God, yeah, dude. Oh my God, I fucking hate him. All
right,
Scummer.
My number four is a movie I rewatched over this weekend. Guy Ritchie's Jason Statham heist/revenge movie, Wrath of Man. Wrath of Man is excellent and underrated, underseen. More people should see it, but it's like a deceptive revenge movie because it's not until the midpoint that you really get the terms as to why it's a revenge movie. You always know something's up, but it goes from a heist procedural to a revenge movie to a revenge heist procedural movie. And it's just, I think it's Guy Ritchie's finest hour as a director. I think it's probably Jason Statham's finest hour as an actor. Clint Eastwood's son is a shitty actor, but whatever, he's fine in it. Just a totally killer movie that uses revenge tropes well, because there is not a single character in that movie that isn't a complete fucking shithead. But we side with Jason Statham because he's a principled shithead. And that's where I think revenge movies end up getting a lot of mileage, is through principle, even if it's not through morals. Steven, yeah. Number four.
Prisoners.
Oh, right. Prisoners. On. Great flick.
Prisoners, it fucked me up real bad when I first watched it.
Hugh Jackman career best, in my humble opinion.
He did some huge acting.
Yeah, that indeed.
And the only reason I don't like that movie is because Jake Gyllenhaal's character's name is Loki.
Fair enough. In Nightcrawler, his name's Lou Bloom, which is the local towing guy.
Oh yeah, it is. Paul. I was gonna say Paul Rudd. Paul Dano does amazing. Terrence Howard, even though I hate him, does great in this
great
movie.
Job.
And that's all I got.
Right on. Yeah, we got to move through them before
run out of time. So number three for me is V for Vendetta.
Oh, right.
Why? Because they do revenge.
Yeah.
I rewatched V for Vendetta during quarantine, and it was fucked up because that movie just like described the state of affairs in America down to there being a fucking virus going around. I was like, this is hitting very close to home at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just I love that movie. That's another one with like really great action sequences and shit, and just like, yeah, like you got to suspend your disbelief and shit like that for it as well, of course, but it's really cool.
I love Hugo Weaving does such a good job behind the
mask.
He's
so fucking good, man. I love
behind
that,
the
dude.
Mask, that there's no way he could see enough to fight from behind.
The whole like thing where he's like explaining to Evie like why he wants to blow up the building and like what it means. You know what I mean? It's just like so fucking good. That's all I got.
If you have a chance to read the comic book that it's based on, highly recommend. Really good stuff. Really good stuff. Alan Moore of Watchmen fame. My number three is Rolling Thunder. William Devane plays a guy who's back from Vietnam. There's a home invasion, and it kills his wife and I believe his daughter or son, I forget. And then him and his Vietnam buddy, played by a young Tommy Lee Jones, take their shit out on the world, getting revenge. A classic revenge movie. I know Tarantino's a very big fan of it, and it's written by Paul Schrader, writer of Taxi Driver, you know, did Autofocus and all that. Classic old movie, just brutal revenge movie, but really a lot of fun. Like one of the template setters for things like Taken and Death Wish and shit like that. Rolling Thunder, highly recommend.
My number three is Ocean's 11.
Yo, it
nice,
is.
Nice, man. Very nice. Yeah. That's a revenge movie. Absolutely.
We've talked about Ocean's 11 enough on this podcast. I won't bring it, but I will say I wanted to put this one in the list because it was a way to get revenge by using your brain and not by
And nobody died, right? No violence, really.
Yep.
A little bit.
Just tries to outsmart him. Well, that's the thing. Right. Like, if somebody gets revenge on me and they kill me, okay, you know, I lost. But if they make me look like a bitch, oh, I lost hard.
Yeah.
And they made him look like a bitch.
Yep. All right. So what are we, number two?
Number two.
Okay. My number two, and this is like really, really hard for me to pick between these two movies because I like them both a lot. But here we go. The winner is number two is going to be Gladiator for me.
Nice. Good one.
It's because he gets revenge.
he gets revenge. I'll tell you what.
No, but it is because of how fucking epic and the scope of the whole thing, both his fall, you know, from like, because he's like a general and shit. And
oh, yeah.
Like, he, you know, he goes down into the depths with like these dudes, and like even then like earns like their camaraderie and respect and shit because he's just a fucking badass. And then he actually does succeed and get fucking revenge.
He's the general who became a slave and the slave who defied an empire.
And I mean, how iconic is that fucking scene? I know it's like, you know, totally. Are you not entertained? Like, I mean, that it's just so dope. Every
I'm due
time.
For a rewatch.
Care. I couldn't watch. I want to watch it right now.
I couldn't watch Joaquin Phoenix in other movies for a while after that because I hated him so much because he was such a fuck. That's how damn good he was. That's such a good movie. Yeah. I gotta rewatch that. My number two is Blue Ruin.
I've never seen that, but another one I almost have seen.
It's great. And it's another one that holds its cards close to the chest until later on in the movie. But it culminates in there's this one line, and I'm not going to say it, but it's when the person getting revenge in a single line describes why this has to happen and why it's so fucked up that it has to happen. And it's really heartbreaking stuff. But Blue Ruin is Jeremy Saulnier directed it. Highly recommend. Macon Blair is the star. Macon Blair. Fantastic actor. And actually, his brothers were guests on the show in the past. We'll have them in again. And they did the music for the movie, Blue Ruin.
That's dope.
Yeah. All right, we got to rock it through these because we got 3 minutes before the clock runs out.
My number two is The Protector. Where are my elephants?
That was really good.
Yeah. So the staircase scene in John Wick 4 is a reference to the staircase sequence in The Protector.
I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing that same thing.
All right, number one.
Where am I at?
My number one is Memento.
Yes, nice. Very good.
I was really hoping we would not have the same number ones, but I don't think that's the case now. But yeah.
And the reason, really quickly, just to sum it up, I love that it's a revenge movie. And like, honestly, the frightening aspect is at the end of the film, he's not even sure if he did it.
Yeah,
and we are not sure how many times he's forgotten if he did it,
or if it was a dream.
If he did it, he doesn't get to revel in the success of having gotten revenge. Right. It's a completely weightless pursuit.
It's like fucking crazy to me. Anyway, that's mine.
There's no chance for the revenge to get cold. All right, my number one is the Pedro Almodovar film, The Skin I Live In. There's been an episode of the show dedicated to it. Another one plays its cards very close to the chest. Read nothing about it. You should go in as blind as possible. It's not even clear the terms of the revenge until much later in the film, but definitely check it out and do it now because it is out of print. I managed to snag a copy off of eBay the other day, but a damn good movie. The Skin I Live In, La Piel Que Habito, if we were to say it in Spanish, because you might have to look up the Spanish title. Yeah, CC.
My number one is a stacked cast. Again, you don't find out it's a revenge movie until almost the very end. It is Lucky Number 11.
Yes! I was hoping this would come up.
Dude. It's on my bonus.
Probably my, because it's also like one of a lighter one until like the very end when you realize, oh, this guy is just really out to kill everybody.
He pulled a Kansas City Shuffle.
You go left, they go right.
You go left, they go right. Yeah, that's actually the first movie I ever saw at any film festival ever. Nice. It was Lucky Number 7. It was a hell of a way to kick off the film fest that year.
Yo, how much time do we have?
Less than one minute. Fuck. But so that's all right. If you want, you can send me some of your honorable mentions and I can put them into the show notes. But that was Movie. I like to Movie. You can find everything we do at Movie Cast. You can check out me and Steven's other podcast, Hot Property, at Hot Property Pod. You can find all of this stuff at Scully Vision. And we have merch, which you can get at tinyurl.com/hotpropshop.
Sure.
Less than a minute left. Joe, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for having me, man. I had a great time.
Joe's got a friend who made a short film called Good Neighbor. And when I get more Good details Neighbors on Watch. That... I will Good Neighbors Watch. I'll put it in the show notes. So shoot me some information about that. But otherwise, that's been Movie.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.